Nomad Podcast.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Nomad Podcast. And today we will have a very special guest. It's Reina Chicas. And we met Reina at the Bitcoin Atlantis conference on Madeira. And she's such a lovely person. So story or the topic more that we will discuss today is Bitcoin education, and especially Bitcoin education in El Salvador. As a Salvadorian, Reina will tell us a lot about what is going on and currently how El Salvador is basically a nation and a country which we should follow because El Salvador lives with Bitcoin. They use Bitcoin daily, they pay their bills with Bitcoin, and I think Europe should take El Salvador as an example. So let's not spoil too much and get right into the episode.
Hello, I'm Yanis.
And hi, I'm Natalie.
And welcome to another episode of Nomad Podcast. And today we have a special guest, and it's Reina Chicas. I hope I said that right. So Reina, why don't you start telling about yourself, who you are, and what you do in the Bitcoin space?
Hi, guys. Hi, Natalie. Hi, Yanis. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here. Yes, I'm Reina. You pronounce it really well, Yanis. I'm from El Salvador. I was born and raised in El Salvador, and I work with My First Bitcoin. We are a nonprofit about Bitcoin education based in El Salvador. And I met you guys. We met in Bitcoin Atlantis. It was really cool. I was invited to the kids' blog. So I work mostly in the Department of Education here. And we can start now. I'm really excited.
Okay, first question. Actually, two questions. How did you get into Bitcoin, and what did you think of me eating dog food or cat food, I think it was, at the kids' block? So although it wasn't cat food, people, it was just beans, but we did like don't trust verify. We tried to teach that to the children. But yeah, how did you get into Bitcoin, and what were your thoughts on me eating cat food?
Yeah, I think that was very brave. We were all like very wondering what was that. So I got into Bitcoin maybe end of 2020. And okay, it was basically, you know, my brother is a little bit more techie, so he was already into hearing these cryptocurrencies and stuff. And we basically was just, you know, a way so we could see if we can make more dollars, let's say, like just, you know, to get another income or something. So we are in El Salvador, and then we started hearing the rumors about the law that it was going to be, you know, Bitcoin legal tender here in El Salvador. So I was more, okay, maybe I should investigate and see what this is, because it was a little bit strange to me that something that works only in the internet will come to El Salvador. And sometimes we don't even have really reliable internet connection. So I was like, how is this going to work? And also, it was a bit scary at the beginning, let's say, to think that we would have a new currency, because about 23 years ago already, that was in 2001, we changed our currency. Like, it was a law that we used to have Salvadorian colones, and now we just have US dollars. So maybe we thought that it was going to be sort of similar, you know, that it was going to be hard again to get the hang of another, and it wasn't. So after that, I started to look at the internet. I found videos of Andreas Antonopoulos, which it was great, right? Because he's a very, like, a good advocate for Bitcoin, and that you can learn. And I didn't run into other cryptos. I never bought any other cryptocurrency because I saw that maybe Bitcoin was a little bit more stable, if we want to call it that way. I was like, I mean, must be a reason why this one is, like, the price is higher. So once I see what this is, maybe I can look into other things. And then I never look back. I was like, okay, no, I don't need to go and check any other currencies. But it was more between my brother and I that we started to investigate it. And after the law, a lot of YouTubers were here in El Salvador trying to, you know, find out what was this Bitcoin thing. So that led, one thing led to another. And then I saw that there was this organization here, Mi Primer Bitcoin, trying to teach Salvadorians. So it's, and then I got into the rabbit hole, right? Like, you just go and find one book, and then when you find another video, and then, like, it's a never-ending learning curve.
So that's your journey, basically. That's
yeah,
incredible.
Basically.
It's always funny. Whenever we had guests or we talked to people at conferences, they always said, oh, it was me or my brother, or I was someone of my family. You know, it's always someone of the family who teaches you that stuff, or who shows you Bitcoin. So I mean, there's no second best, right? There's only one Bitcoin.
Yeah.
But I want to focus on something else right now. Bitcoin education, educating people on Bitcoin. How was that for you at the beginning? And how essentially then did you get into educating people yourself about what Bitcoin is? Would you like to tell us something about that?
Yes, of course. Honestly, I think it's very, there are times that it's very humbling because you have all this knowledge and you want to pass it on to people, but we don't, everybody learns differently. And especially, you know, us, say millennials, I'm over 30 years old. We come from a school system that is just memorizing and passing tests and this. So when we want to have these, you know, conversations with the students about just critical thinking, it's very strange for them to just, you know, there is no right or wrong answer. We just want to know what you think money is, why we need it, what it's for, what do you think inflation, what causes inflation. And they just don't know. And then also I go to, you know, teaching adults and it's the same. Like they just don't know. We're like, yeah, we're just to prices going up. That's the way it's always been. Like my parents were able to have a house, but I cannot afford to buy a house on my own just yet. And then you go like, okay, you have to step back and everything that you've learned, you have to find the easiest way to explain it to people. You have to look for more analogies because it's a kid sometimes, honestly, it's been astonished to me how kids can get it faster sometimes. Mm-hmm. They understand and they send transactions. So I think it has to be a process where you have to stay focused and humbled as well to learn how to make the best version of a topic to different audiences, that what you learned not necessarily has to be the same way someone else is going to learn it. Sometimes also to be very honest, but do not scare people. We as humans don't normally like change, so we're not going to go all paranoid. The economic system is going to collapse, right? Like we cannot do that. Like there is a lot of people still working very hard, and they have, especially here in Latin America, they struggle to save money, let alone saving Bitcoin, that they don't know it, right? They see that the price is volatile. So of course we have to, you know, put ourselves in their shoes, how hard it is for different people to trust something that is super, super new. So I think here, one of the things that we preach more and try to add me Premier Bitcoin is, we want to be impartial. So that means that we don't want to dictate what people wants to believe or learn. Like they can take the knowledge. If at the end of a course, for example, they don't want to use Bitcoin or they don't want to save in Bitcoin, that's fine. Mm-hmm. As long as at least you know, right? Like you know what it is, you know where to download a wallet, you know how you can buy some Bitcoin if you want to. But if you feel like you are not ready for it, that's fine. But normally that doesn't happen. But of course, people like to have the option of have a wallet that has, stable sats, for example, stable coins, because they're very afraid. They're very afraid of the price. So it's been a very interesting journey. And I really enjoy it, but I think most of it brings you new learning things. It's not just about Bitcoin. You also learn about how people learn on their own. What you gotta do to make sure that you don't come across of one of these toxic Bitcoiners of you gotta learn it all. Everybody's in a different journey in their life.
So when you decided to make some education for kids or for people in El Salvador, I think you are part of the non-profit organization My First Bitcoin, right?
Correct, yes.
And you also use the diploma project, the Bitcoin diploma project as a tool for kids or for El Salvadorians. So how started this project together with Bitcoin diploma, and how does the cooperation with the government works? That would be an interesting question.
I know. Yeah. It's very interesting. You know, our founder, so Mi Primer Bitcoin was born here in El Salvador, right? Like, we're based here, but we always say, like, focus is in El Salvador, but the mission is the world. We started the Bitcoin Diploma in 2022, and it was the first time, you know, that a course on Bitcoin was taught in a public school system. I believe in the world, but definitely here in El Salvador. And after that, you know, it got a lot of traction. Like, it, even for us, yesterday we had a meetup. We have a monthly meetup here in El Salvador where we just go and meet the community in Salvador that wants to learn more about Bitcoin. So that is only 2 years and a half old, the project, the nonprofit. Now we are definitely more established in how fast we've grown. But it's just because of the demand of all the other people around the world that saw it and like, oh, we want to learn about that. So we started here, and last year we signed an MOU with the Ministry of Education to teach. So this was a pilot. We taught 150 teachers from the public school system using, so they basically took, you know, the Bitcoin Diploma. The Bitcoin Diploma is a course, let's say a workbook, that has 10 chapters, and it starts, the first 1 to 5 is basically our monetary system. What is money? How does it work? You know, inflation, the history and the evolution of money in, until now, like, you know, paper, fiat, and Bitcoin. And then after we get into Bitcoin, like, what is it? How does it work? How you can storage, and the basics of, you know, the whole system, like mining, nodes, and all of that, to the basic level. This is to take people from zero to something, right? To mm-hmm. something. And so they used basically the Bitcoin Diploma as a base to create their own product, the Minister of Education. And after the training, those teachers go to their own classrooms and teach their own students. So that went really well. And so our founder, John, he's from the States. And sometimes we joke about, he was like, if you will tell me 10 years ago that I was going to be working with a government, I would not believe you because, you know, this is just crazy. Like, he's been an activist his whole life. And so now it's about, I would say here in El Salvador is about 10 of us or 15, but internationally the team is nearly 20 people between. And that's like, let's say on payroll, right? There are volunteers also that collaborate. And the Bitcoin Diploma now, it's actively being translated in, I believe it's 23 languages. So it's a lot of people, you know, that wants to use it, and there are communities. So we wanted to start this, say, Lightknot network around the world. And it's basically, the Lightknot network from Ethereum Bitcoin is a self-governance network. Like, they choose who, you know, if more people want to apply or communities want to apply, they vote who can enter, who not. And the first node was in Guatemala. Like, we wanted to try it last year. And that's when I was already a little bit involved. I was more of a volunteer with Mi Primer Bitcoin, and they invite me to go and teach the Bitcoin Diploma to Guatemala. So I think, especially us being so, you know, we are neighbors, mm-hmm. and because they see what's happening in El Salvador, and comes, you know, in terms of security and all of that, they were a little bit more open about the fact that, okay, so if you're from El Salvador and it's legal there, maybe it's not super, because people is scared, especially outside, right? Here, maybe some of them are like, okay, that makes sense that we should learn it. So because we live here and eventually this is not going to go away, so we might as well put something with it. Mm-hmm. And but even at the beginning, like, some of the teachers of the Minister of Education weren't really happy, because everybody has their own opinions, right? Mm-hmm. But it comes just without knowing, just because they don't know what it is. But once they learn, they're like, oh, okay. It's like those aha moments, right? Like, oh, okay. So this is what it is. It's not a scam. It's not an investment. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of concepts that they learn.
It's a realization. It's a
exactly.
Explosion, basically. You know, like, the universe exploded and expanded. That's Bitcoin in my eyes. So, was it then hard for, not for you specifically, but for people like you who understand Bitcoin, to explain Bitcoin to someone else? Or was it essentially easy? Was it, you know, was it like, Bitcoin is that or these, and they immediately got it? Or was that, was there some kind of tension where people said, hold on, no, I'm not gonna, it's not my thing, you know? So
yeah, I mean, it's not the same for everybody, but for sure it's not super easy. I wouldn't say it's very easy. It's just there are certain groups that are easier than others. There are certain groups, and I guess it's also, especially here with Bitcoin, in other countries, if you learn it, just learn about Bitcoin. But there are a lot of myths here, and it's very funny when you go especially to the rural areas of the country where there are not a lot of technology yet, that they even think that the president, Bukele, is the one that invented Bitcoin. So that's the level of, you know, like people really don't know. Like they think there is a marketing team. And we are like, no, Bitcoin doesn't have a marketing team. So that's when it's a little bit sometimes harder because they think it's political. So if then you don't like, you know, the government, then they're like, you are just, you close your brain to it because you're like, oh, no. You're just coming here with propaganda. And so that's when it's harder. But it can be easier when people like the government sometimes, honestly, because like, oh, okay, yeah, he put it. But it goes both ways. But answering your question, like if it's easy for me to explain because I already know it now, now it's a little bit easier, but it wasn't at the beginning. Mm-hmm. But I think it's been easier because of all the people that I met, that they are also educators, and they tell me, hey, so I teach this subject this way, then the other that way. And that's why, you know, the Bitcoin diplomas, it gets better by new version because we get more feedback. We get more from the community, from coiners that know. They read the previous version and they're like, hey, guys, this doesn't make any sense. So let's just switch that. But at the beginning, it was. It was because you think that it's all here, but honestly, it isn't. Like Einstein said, right? If you don't explain anything easy, then you don't understand it. And it happens because you have, I think one thing is watching all these videos and reading all these books. But then when you want to explain very hard concepts to people, especially, you know, the consensus and all of that, you can get all confused in your own head. So then you come across, oh, this is really hard to understand. And it really isn't. But at the beginning, it was a little bit harder. I was more like by the book. I was like, read this or watch this because I don't know how to explain it. But I think that's when you want to step up and learn more so you can be a better educator.
It is also that you don't also want to share it sometimes. You also want to keep it to yourself because my head, it's always like that. What if I explain it to them, but then they think I'm a dork, you know? They think I'm a nerd. And that's why the reason I never talked about Bitcoin to my friends, because some of them would get it, but some of them would also just ignore it because, you know, oh, it's Bitcoin, it's a scam. So, Mom, would you like to say something?
What do you think about market now? The price is really high, so I think El Salvador is get now a role model as a state. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is that a help for you, or does it help for perhaps any other projects like in Latin America, like you did in Guatemala? What do you think about that?
I think it helps in a way that people get interested because of the prices going up. Mm-hmm. When it's low, then they are like, oh, no, you see, like you're just wasting all your money. The price keeps going down. So it helps in that way. But it makes it complicated when then, sadly, you know, there's still bad people in this world that definitely are scams. That they're actually people that is trying to scam people. And because they see the price going up and they get all excited, they don't know anything about it, they fall into those fake promises of investment and everything, and people just lose money. So when we go to the classrooms or this group, they are like, oh, no, I pay someone, I don't know, like $300, and they just stole my money. But we're like, yeah, that was probably not Bitcoin, you know, in which way. And then when they learned about self-custody, and, you know, your private keys and all of that, or even your own wallet on your phone, they're like, oh, okay, no, they never sent me anything. So we're like, okay, yeah, it's just a different way of scam, you know, it's, it's also going to change every time. Like back in the days, it was different types. Now it was with phone calls, but now it happens with crypto. So it helps. But then if people has fallen into those traps, then they're definitely very, very, they don't want to learn anything because they had a bad experience. And it's understandable, right? But it takes a while to, I mean, we've got comments when we go to classroom sometimes, especially the ones that are open enrollments in, you know, some part of El Salvador, and then people can actually go and it's for free, but they just want to go and attack it, right? So they think that we are, you know, part of the government team or something trying to steal it. And when the Bitcoin law came to effect here, the government has a wallet that's called Chivo. That wallet had a lot of issues. It's linked to your identity, basically. It's linked to our identity. So a lot of people that tried to withdraw, and the government gave $30 in Bitcoin for people to download it. And a lot of people tried to, and they did, right? And but what happened is that a lot of people, when they tried to access and create it with their own ID, it said that it was already withdrawn or existed, which just led us to believe, okay, so there is a lot of identity steals here, because if someone had your number, that means that they could have access. And then a lot of people is like, okay, I just want to know if you're going to give me my $30. But that was 2 years ago. Like, we don't know what happened, right? But it happened that a lot of people got their identity basically used to enter and to withdraw. And it happened to a lot of people. So it's people that they were never able to use their government wallet, which it's fine, right? Like, they shouldn't. But a lot of people still think about those $30 that they never got because of the scam. Yeah.
I remember in Riga, the Honey Badger conference, Ricky, the Italian from, what's his podcast called?
Bitcoin Explorer.
Bitcoin Explorer, he talked about that. Like, he was like, for fuck's sakes, how can we as a Bitcoiners just watch and you know, he really got into it. So, and he then said he hates it. That's what he said. But he then I think when was that? When my brother Joel, he went to El Salvador
in November.
And he then told me that. Yeah, they still have some problems, but it's mostly gone. And people just adapted to new wallets or to different wallets, you know? People always can adapt. That's the thing. We just have to. If we don't want to live in slavery, then we don't live in slavery. But if people ignore it and they just want to live in slavery, for example, then there you go, you know? We just have to say no, because no is like, words can always say that. No is no, you know? So, but... currently in El Salvador, how is the situation going on? Is there a lot of Bitcoin adoption? And do people try to understand it more? Or is it still it's Bitcoin, we're going to eventually have a look at it, but then they never do, you know? Is it still a harsh market, or is the market slowly rising, you know?
I think it's a slowly rising. I wouldn't say the same last year, for example, but especially this year with the price going up, people starting to see what the actual cycles are. Mm-hmm. Because they've seen, you know, okay, it went to 70,000. It went down to 60-something, but it's staying there. So then people started to realize, and then when you show them a basic graphic of the price, that this is how it works, this is how it's going to be for a while. This is not about making tons of money. You're not going to be millionaire because you didn't get Bitcoin at $1. It's just what it is. And I think even with the adoption, it's going to come also from businesses accepting more. And we can see now, I would say 90% of the time, when I go to a place, I do ask them if they accept Bitcoin, because I know that little by little people is using it more. But since I normally go to the same places, I know they don't accept it. I don't like to be, you know, like bugging people, especially if it's a private business. But they ask me more now, or sometimes they are like, okay, do you know how will that work? Like, if we want to accept Bitcoin, or sometimes they say, no, not yet. But before, it was more of no, like, we just don't accept that. And that's a good thing, because a lot of you know, the international media, for example, the mainstream media said, that, you know, El Salvador put this law, and it's like, no one was obligated to accept it. Like, it's still technically legal, so they should accept. But the government is not forcing them. If you don't want to accept Bitcoin, then that's fine. I mean, it's your loss. And then there are a lot of businesses, small businesses, that we used to tell them, if you get your sales, if you see that the sales are not that high, keep it, like, use that as a saving. But they would always be, because of the Chivo, they can switch it back to US dollars and then just withdraw it from the ATM. And now they are like, oh, I should have, you know, listen to you and leave some of the Bitcoin. But that's how you learn, right? And they are going to start now seeing it also as a medium of exchange too, which is not what they do yet. They accept Bitcoin, but normally they will switch it to dollars and that they will withdraw it, but at least they will accept it. And a lot of people here at the beginning were like, they just associated Chivo and Bitcoin, like it was the same thing. But now it's what you said, Janice, it's not anymore. The more they're learning, they know Chivo is just another wallet. It's just something else that you can use. It's easier for Salvadorians, for example, to buy Bitcoin because we have that. So it's easy to go an ATM or use your debit card. But if you already know at least how to switch to another wallet, self-custody wallet, even on your phone, then they feel more comfortable. And I think it's also because at the beginning, you want to trust what you think that you can trust, right, which is the government. A lot of people think that the system works as it is, and they're like, okay, if this is from the government, then it must be legit. So they are scared to use something else, and they use that one. But we don't want to push people to think they are going to learn on their own. So that adoption, I think, is coming from people that already used at least that one. Now they're trying to learn about new ones, and then also businesses trying to accept either it's because of there are more tourists. Next week, there is a halving party here that has been, I don't know who organized it, but it's really big. So a lot of people is coming. So that makes Salvadorian people see that it's not just here. That's a global thing, a global movement, you know? So like, okay, it was not the president that put it here. A lot of people comes from outside and everybody knows it.
It's okay, Yanis, ask.
Should I?
Yeah.
You can. Okay. But then essentially also, you know, when it's global, people will also see it as a movement. And I'm totally in for seeing Bitcoin as a movement because it's a movement. It's a peaceful revolution. It's something that gives us freedom. Because, I mean, I'm not sure if you have seen it in the news, but Australia literally just implemented CBDCs, digital ID bill. That's what they called it, a digital ID bill. And they all said it's for making money digital. It's for making your ID digital. I'm like, oh, well, so basically if I'm not vaccinated, for example, let's take that as an example, they close your bank account, right? Or if you say something against the state, aka like Julian Assange did with what he did against the US, they put you in jail and then close your bank account and destroy your whole life. So I think that's important that we spread the message. And in my opinion, El Salvador is the perfect example, you know, to spread the message of Bitcoin because it's one of the states which accepted Bitcoin, which uses Bitcoin. So, Mom, you wanted to say something.
That brings me to the next question. Can you imagine working with Europe to show us how great your work was? Because I think we have a lot of work to do here in Europe, especially if we see the West is falling. In different parts, in money, in finance, in whatever it is. Well, we have cultural differences, but I think Bitcoin can bring us together. So can you imagine you to work with Europe, with us, together, to educate young people, the new generation, but also other people?
Yes. You mean me personally as well? I mean, for sure. But one thing that we say in Primer Bitcoin is that I think we believe context matter. It's exactly what you said. There are cultural differences. I mean, first of all, I do agree with you that, you know, Bitcoin brings us together. We can see it in the conference, for example, it's such a different vibe and energy that you ended up having when we go to a Bitcoin conference. Because it's funny, I know that we want us conference for more people to visit, you know, for example, at Madeira, we wanted people, the locals, to go and see it. But at the same time, it's a place for all of us to hang out. Yeah. From people from all over the world that we like this, and it feels like a religion, right? Like we just get together and, mm-hmm. and talk about it, and then you have different perspectives. But I don't know if you know, Natalie, I think you were to the women's brunch, for example, right?
Yep.
It was the first time that I went to a women-only event in Bitcoin, and I loved it. Like the energy was just so different. It was like no competition. We didn't know a lot of people, but we would just chat with a stranger and talk about what we do and what they do. So, because when I think when we say Bitcoin is hope, to me, it's different every day. Sometimes, I mean, it goes to a global scale. You know, it's a movement, peaceful and inclusive. But sometimes it's just when one student here tells me that they want to save, and I was just watching the news on Twitter that they suck, right? Like sometimes it's, especially with the wars and everything, I'm like, we just need better news. Like we just need good news every day. So to me, sometimes that's the hope of the day. Mm. The hope of, you know, for example, here, Janice, what he says, and he's just 18. I'm like, that's hope to me that the next generation is going to have a few people that is interested in bringing this to their community, to their locals. So then teaching, for example, different cultures, I think that's why the Lightning Network is being also successful, because you get it differently. You know, if an European comes here and wants to teach Bitcoin, yes, some people is going to, you know, like it and believe it, and they're going to be okay with it. But at the same time, they're going to be, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. You're not from El Salvador. Or the other way around. If I go there and they're like, oh, it's easy for you because you live there and you can pay everything. I honestly can live on a Bitcoin standard here if I would like to, because there are more apps and companies here. We have Bitrefill, for example. I can pay my electricity bill, my internet bill, everything on Bitcoin using a different platform, let's say, but I can do it. So if I earn my salary in Bitcoin, I can basically do it. I can go to the supermarket and I can pay Bitcoin, which is at the basics, right? I don't know what else it is to live, pay by rent. So in Europe, it's to me, it's a little bit tricky in a way, because yes, it's hard, like you said, you know, the economic system and its inflation is hard in everyone, everywhere. Mm. But I think that the big difference on use and people actually saving, because it's the Western world, right? So you've had better opportunities and a little bit more privilege over the years. So the way, you know, the government, so they are going to say, oh, because you live that, you see the use. But to me, it works fine. You know, like euros or pounds, I'm okay with it. Like, I don't mind not having a middleman, like, as long as I get my things done. So, but if someone, like, for example, like you guys, that you live in the UK and know your arounds, like, what can Bitcoin do or be useful for? Because it's a different context. For example, the people in Africa, there's this guy, Felix from Kenya, he's a node in the network, and we've been trying so hard. We wanted him to go to Madeira and they didn't approve his visa. We were going to sponsor his, we wanted him to come here to El Salvador. And also it was very hard for him to get a visa, even for El Salvador. So when you talk to them, the use of Bitcoin, it's so sad that, you know, the poorest, let's say, the countries, the more expensive is to send money. The actual use that they do on Bitcoin, like peer-to-peer transactions, it's amazing. Like, I can, because they have lived out of the banking system for so long, it's people that has been excluded completely from the monetary system that the people really don't care, right? Big elites, they don't care about those countries. They learn about Bitcoin and like, oh, okay, so I can use the extra, you know, force of the water here in the community, like the river, whatever, to mine Bitcoin and provide electricity for all these people. We don't have those problems, right? We don't have problems of no electricity, but they see it. So I think when we maybe grow or have, you know, that part of, but I work together, I will definitely say that work together with a team from the locality, like, for example, I can go with you guys and we work together, but you give me your input. Oh no, these topics, people wouldn't be interested in this here. That's what I think it would go normally. Or if I want to go to Africa, sometimes, you know, to me it would be, oh no, yeah, that's easy. I don't know the hardships that they go through life, you know?
You know, Europeans, I'm gonna upset some people, but they have it too good. They are fucking lazy. They trusted the government for years. I mean, yeah, our grandparents are the perfect example. You know, my grandpa grew up after war, after the Second World War. He basically grew up in the Russians. It was back. He grew up in Austria, and back then the Russians occupied Austria because they freed it from the Germans. So, and he grew up in a system where, in a school system especially, where they teach him, be a brave guy, always pay your taxes, always pay your bills, trust the system, never talk against the system. And he just did it because they were brainwashed, right? So, and they had it too good, because that's that generation which got everything. And I mean, we all seen it after the pandemic, how inflation hit the market, how people lost their houses, their homes, how my generation now has to prepare that they won't get anything in the future, you know? That's the thing. Europeans have it too good. They are lazy. They don't want to accept anything else. They just want to take care of me, you know? They don't want to do it themselves. And especially in families like ours, where my mom and I, we're kind of the revolutionaries. We kind of, you know, we always... When
it's
people,
always run in the family. Like,
yeah, it runs in the family. When people went the left, went to the left, we went to the right. We always went the different way. We always went in another direction. So that's kind of it's our curse, but I mean, it's also a gift. So, but topic also family. How was it for you as a, because you said your brother mostly did the technological stuff, mm-hmm, right? So how was it then for you as a person who didn't understand technology but had a brother who talked about technology basically all day, you know, like my brother did? How was it then for you to understand Bitcoin better through technology, through a brother who understands technology? And did you also try to orange pill your parents or someone else of your family?
Yes, I actually did. We took the Bitcoin diploma, for example, here in El Salvador when I learned about it. Like, we probably knew about it, how it works, the tech part of Bitcoin, but not the philosophical part, right? Mm-hmm. So we didn't know about money. That's why the Bitcoin diploma starts with the money, because if we want to see, you know, we want to, you know, explain that Bitcoin might be the solution to a lot of the problems in the world right now, people got to see what the actual problem is. If you don't think that there is a problem, then like you said about Europe, what they're going to think, that they need something else. The government takes care of me. Like, I just pay my taxes. I can see it. Recently, they released the happiest people or country in the world or something, that I believe is Finland. And I'm sure that people, it's happy. I'm not saying that everybody's unhappy. But I think it's also how you measure happiness, right? Yeah. I have a friend from Guatemala. We were very close. She got married to a Finland guy. And she was like, I cannot be an entrepreneur here. It's too expensive to me. Like, I will live a very good life in Latin America with what I'm making on my digital business, but I can't, because there's so much taxes. And it's exactly what you said, Janice. She told me, like, people here is just very accommodating. Like, they think that they're happy because they pay the taxes and then everything is good for them. You have a kid, okay, we're going to give you more money. You have another kid, like, but not everybody has the same life vision for their own life, right? Not everybody probably wants to be a mom super right away. Everybody, some people wants to wait, or you want to be an entrepreneur, but you're not making enough that is going to be, you know, to pay 40% of taxes. So when I see those news now, and she told me, no, it's not really that people is happy. People here, like, it's very cold. It was hard for me to get, you know, a job in the corporate world, let's say. I had all this experience already as a marketing manager in actually, like, regional companies here in hotels, but they didn't count over there for them. It's like, no, if you didn't study here, then that doesn't matter. Like, we just don't believe you. And all the words were very, you know, not too look down on anybody, but if you worked your way up and you follow the traditional path, thinking that you were going to make a decent life, and then it's not true. Mm-hmm. It works differently when you see Bitcoin that way. And so I learned to say the Bitcoin diploma with my sister. And yeah, we can say that they are Bitcoiners as well, to be honest. Little by little, we told my parents. I think in my personal case, and that's why I got involved with my primer Bitcoin, is because I wanted to do something more meaningful. Like, mm-hmm. to me, and I've learned, and probably from all the books, trying to find happiness in life, right? That when you have a purpose, it's basically what wakes you up every day. It doesn't matter if you have a long day at work, or it works just differently, and it makes you happy. And when I saw the passion that these people had to educate more people, and I'm like, this is different. So my family, for example, like my parents now save on Bitcoin. They probably don't understand the whole thing. But I think that we would already be predisposed. It's probably similar like your family, that it's always been these differences within the whole family, right? My parents, for example, with the vaccines at the beginning, we didn't even know about Bitcoin just yet. But we were like, this is mandatory. Why should we put something that it's like mandatory? And always mm-hmm. questioning. So I'm very grateful to them. I was telling them the other day to my dad and my mom, I was like, I'm really grateful that when I used to read the news, when we used to read newspapers, actually, right? Like I would see it in the house, and whether it's true or not, you will let me question, because now I remember a lot of things that when I go to Europe and I tell them, oh yeah, I remember that whatever terrorist attack. And they're like, how did you know? Because this is not in your country. It was 20 years ago. Like, I just used to read it. And when I was learning to read, I used to try to teach my siblings. I'm the oldest one. And I think nowadays, parents are like, oh, they just give you a screen. They just give you the phone, just, you know, entertain. They don't let you deal with your feelings, with your anger, with anything. And it was a different race. So I think that's what also predisposes us to question things. And when we learned about Bitcoin and we saw that it was disruptive, we didn't feel uncomfortable, because we've been trying all our life to, you don't have to believe, like, they never pushed us a career. Like, they never saw, if mm-hmm. you don't study this, then you are going to die of, you know, starving. Or if you study this, then you're not going to make money. It's whatever makes you happy. If you like this, and, you know, just, of course, think a little bit about the box, you have to make a living. But if you rather work right now, you feel like you want to make some for yourself, and you don't feel going to university and paying, because it reaches a level, right? Like, I think the 2008 crisis, the economic crisis, hit everyone. With my parents, mm-hmm. we do remember, you know, my parents, my dad, for example, like my mom was a stay-home mom, which was a privilege back in the days, right? Like only one parent, so she could look after us with homework, with raising. So that's the difference, right, in today's world. When I think about being a mom, for example, like I would like to spend time with my kids, but with the current economy, I don't know, you can't. I can only stay for 3 months. I can't. And I'm like, then I'm not going to raise my kids. Someone else is going to do it. I'm not going to be there to teach them about critical thinking and all of these things. And the current school system is scary, honestly. Even here to me, it's crazy how we are being influenced about all these Western ideologies of not telling anything. We're just creating little monsters. Like, they're not going to do anything. So,
I mean,
I think it's very united because of it now. We just feel under that one umbrella. Yeah.
Mom always says I'm from Mars, so I guess I'm her Mars monster. But yeah, but Bitcoin time, yeah. Bitcoin brings peace to a system which is broken. And what she said, that as if you would be a mom, you couldn't stay home with your children. You would have to work, because otherwise your family wouldn't survive. I think they did that on purpose, because they're trying to take the mother-children bond. You know, they're trying to break that, the bond between parents and children. Because guess what? If your parents or... No, if the children are not connected to parents, and if parents are not connected to the children, guess what would happen? The children eventually break out. You know, they start getting crazy. They start getting, frustrated. And that's their goal, right? That's the goal of the system. They want to break people. They want people enslaved. And through Bitcoin, and I know I'm talking a long sentences, I'm so sorry, but that's like a topic I'm really I'm excited to talk about. Bitcoin brings peace to that. Bitcoin connects. And in our family, we had the case that Bitcoin for us was much more understandable because it connected to us. It connected to us and it connected us. It brought something, you know, like those movies where they're all sitting in front of the Christmas tree and they're all singing. And it was like that kind of, not that exactly. Fairy tale like, but it really brought something into our family, which changed us and our whole family. And with that in mind, my last question for you, Reina, before we're going to end this episode. What do you think of politicians, a.k.a. Christine Lagarde, or a.k.a. what's her name, Yellen, or Thunder Yellen, you know, the one from the U.S.? Thoughts on them. Thoughts on those women.
It's very funny how sometimes, you know, people or even on the team, they make jokes about that in names. And I'm really bad at following external politicians because I just think that they're toxic. I think we can just follow, you know, just use better our time. But I think fear makes you do crazy things, say crazy things. I think when you are scared about something you don't know, about something you don't understand, about something that maybe you do understand, but basically challenges every single belief that you've had your whole life, especially at an older age. And you're not going to want people telling you the system is broken because you basically were part of creating that system because you thought that was the best. I don't know if it was with good intentions or bad intentions, who knows? If you are a bad person, then you did it with intentions for yourself, selfish. So I think they just think that they, by saying it to themselves, that they can keep the same system. They're like, you know, when you tell a lie so many times that you believe it yourself. So I think sometimes that's what they do. They just want to keep, you know, fighting for the same things that we live, the same system that we have. And they just want, they wish that their message and their words were going every stream media so everybody would believe it. But I think it's an interesting world that we live in now that little by little more people is actually questioning. For whatever reason, even if you haven't heard about Bitcoin just yet, you definitely are starting to realize, hey, something is happening here. Like it's just too crazy. You can see back in, you know, go back or watch at least one of Ray Dalio's videos of world changing orders, that they do make sense. And you go and think about what they're teaching you in school, what they're teaching your kids, and question why do they have to learn about this or why they don't have to learn about this. Nobody teaches money in the schools, you know? And you guys should, like, we should learn what is money. It's so important. We use it every day. The kids, we can see when they, you know, do bargain between them with one candy for something else, which means that they already understand the basic, like, the concepts. So that's one of our goals also, like with Mi Primer Bitcoin. We said that last night. We're going to start creating with, you know, Lena from The Little Holder? She's German too.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, from The Little Holder. So she's living here now. And we are going to start with the Ministry of Education, a different project, to start developing materials and workbooks for kids to start teaching at 7 years old, from 7 to 9, and then a second book from 9 to 10. And to me, that's revolutionary to think that in El Salvador we're going to have something like that, that we can export to the world. And that's going to be open source as well, which is amazing that they accepted to do it. And when then I see, like you said, you know, and I see those politicians and I see their comments, and I'm like, they just live in their own cloud, thinking that just because they keep saying that to themselves, the world is going to continue the same just because the sake of they want it.
I think it's the best way you can do is to don't get any energy or room for all the Elizabeth Warrens and Christine Lagardes and however they call
Yellen
Yellen and let us give our focus and laser eyes on Bitcoin. It is really, it's the best revolution ever, I see.
Exactly.
And it is a peaceful revolution. So there's really no second best.
There's no second best.
That's the point.
So, anything else you would like to say, right? Like a end statement, kind of like the second best, but anything else you would like to say?
Well, thank you guys for having me. This is a really good chat. I'm looking forward to see you again soon somewhere. No, I would say just, you know, like Natalie says, let's just focus on energy, on what we can control, on what we can contribute, which is Bitcoin from our ends. I work on a Bitcoin education profit, non-profit, but so that's what I do. You guys, you know, have your podcast. So just focus your energy on spreading the message and not wasting our time on watching these people that is only going to bring us, you know, down or just create this energy. Sometimes it's a little bit frustrating. I think it depending on the day that you're at. Sometimes we're like, oh, we feel like we've come so far and then there is a big step back. But I don't think we are. I think this is just, we are at the right time and the right place to do what we can to bring more people together and to act, you know, to be friendly, to be kind, to have empathy with everybody that wants to either learn or wants to just have a question about it or just want to make a question about it and stay humble, right? Stay humble, stay focused. So we are the best example for everybody. We don't want to come across like, oh, they're just more toxic than politicians. We don't want to be that.
Great.
Stay humble and stack some sats. Stay humble, stack some sats. Stack sats now. So, dear people, that was another episode of Nomad Podcast. I really enjoyed it. It's always nice to have people on the show talking about education, especially Bitcoin education, because it's a interesting topic. It's not always easy to talk about because there are like so many things we can cover. We can cover hodling. We could cover using Bitcoin as we did or as we do now in El Salvador, peer-to-peer. But yeah, Reina, you got social media, right? Would you like to share your social media with us?
I do, of course. Yeah, it is. So my on Twitter, you can find us well, myfirstbitcoin_, and also at Reina with White Chicas, and then number 2. I had the 2 because I lost my first account. So it was very simple. I'm just making the 2. And then the same for everything, like Instagram, LinkedIn, if you want to connect. I'm really happy also, like send me a DM.
Okay, cool. So, dear people, make sure to check out Reina and her amazing work she does. And yeah, as I said, another episode of Nomad Podcast. I'm really glad you joined us, Reina, and hopefully see you soon on another conference, maybe? Wink, wink, wink,
another
wink.
Another conference, hopefully, yes.
Hopefully. So, yeah.
Or when you come to El Salvador.
Yes. Oh, yeah, that's a good
idea. That's a great idea.
We come to you.
Yeah.
So,
yes, or you come to us. Yeah. And you have the kids blog too.
we can knock at the Bukeres palace and ask him if we can orange pull more politicians with the
we
help
are
of
nomads,
him,
so we don't we're nomads, have any
Oh, that's great. Yeah. That would be great, yes.
See you soon at the next conference and hopefully And hopefully there will be no second Bitcoin. There will be only one Bitcoin. So there's no second best.
Yes.
So yeah, see you
soon. Thank you guys. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Nomad Podcast.